From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Venezuela's Foreign Minister Delcy Rodriguez arrived in the Iranian capital of Tehran Sunday to review bilateral agreements, energy issues, and the upcoming summit of the Non-Aligned Movement to be held in Caracas. She held a joint press conference with her Iranian counterpart, Mohammad Javad Zarif, following their meeting in the Iranian capital Monday.
It makes it all the more necessary for further cooperation and coordination between the two countries in different fields. Today, we had very good discussions on bilateral issues as well as regional and international affairs. And as for mutual cooperation on different fields, economic, political consultations, and other fields of cooperation, we held talks on that, especially given the fact that given Venezuela's membership in the UN Security Council and the very important problems which our region is facing today. We are very happy that Iran and Venezuela have adopted similar policies in countering the use of bullying and threat and the use of force, and also they have similar policies in opposing the policy of force, including using sanctions. We strongly condemn the U.S. move in its recent decision against Venezuela, and it has introduced Venezuela as a threat. And we believe that the resistance of the Venezuelan people against these foreign threats is similar to the resistance of, as well as the resistance of the Iranian people against foreign threats will make such moves fail. Also, concerning the necessity of coordination between the two countries on oil and also oil policies, we held discussions. Also, we stressed the active presence in international decision-making, and we are very happy to see that the Venezuelan oil minister actually is heading this high-ranking delegation during their trip to Iran and held meetings with the Iranian oil minister, will hold the meeting with the Iranian oil minister, Mr. Zanganeh. And this coordination between Iran and Venezuela and other members, leading members of OPEC, is very important in order to help stabilize the oil market. We appreciate efforts by Venezuela in this regard, and we support those efforts, and we hope that these efforts will come to fruition. Once again, I would like to extend my greetings to the Venezuelan foreign minister and oil minister and their accompanying delegation, and I hope the cooperation between the two countries, well, you know, after Iran, Venezuela will hold the rotating presidency of the Non-Aligned Movement. I hope that the two countries will move forward towards securing the interests of both nations and also towards securing regional and international peace and security, and I hope that this cooperation will serve the interests of all. Once again, I extend my welcome to them. Good day, everybody. I'd like to say welcome to you all. This morning, we held very good talks and discussions we held talks with the Iranian foreign minister, Mr. Javad Zarif. In this trip, I am being accompanied by the Venezuelan oil and mines ministers, I'm very happy. We are very happy to be here today in Iran. And in this trip, we stress the need to further bolster relations between the two countries and two nations. I would like to extend to thank Iran for its support. Iran is supporting Venezuela concerning the decision made by the U.S. The decision made by U.S. President Barack Obama concerning Venezuela. As everybody knows, the 9th of March this year, Obama issued that executive order which it is illogical and illogical. This executive order considers Venezuela as a threat to U.S. interests. I would like to thank Iran for supporting Venezuela in this regard. In today's discussions, we were able to review bilateral relations and cooperation, and we are making good progress in that regard. We have discussions on different fields, including trade, energy, and we hope that this cooperation will help serve the interests of both countries, as well as the countries of all OPEC members. As for political issues, we held discussions with Mr. Zarif concerning our stances in the UN Security Council. As you know, Venezuela is a non-permanent member of the UN Security Council. And within this framework, it is good to know that we believe that the UN Charter must be implemented, especially the part which concerns the equality of all countries. And basically, it stresses respect for non-intervention in the internal affairs of other countries. And based on respect for the right of sovereignty of all nations and countries. Within this framework, we reassured Mr. Zarif that Venezuela will never back down from its stances and will stand firm within this framework and will continue on this path. And we are opposed to any kind of unilateralism. And we are carrying a message of friendship from Mr. Nicolas Maduro for the Iranian government and nation. Well, our friendship with the Iranian government and nation is strategic.
Venezuela and Iran have steadily tightened relations since 1999, when the leader of the Bolivarian Revolution, Hugo Chavez, took office. Both nations are major oil producers that were formerly under the control of the U.S. Both are the subject of U.S. sanctions and have faced various attempts by Washington at regime change. The two countries currently have cooperation agreements in such areas as technology, health, agriculture, food, industry infrastructure, and housing. Iran is the outgoing president of the 120-member group of nations known as the Non-Aligned Movement and hosted the last summit of the group in 2012. Venezuela takes over the presidency this year and will host the 2015 summit in its capital in September. The Saudi air war against Yemen hit the population centers in three Yemeni cities and targeted regions near the Saudi border. Press TV's Waqar Rizvi has more.
It is day 26 of Saudi Arabia's aerial campaign in Yemen. Warplanes have pounded numerous targets in several cities across Yemen. Al Masira TV, a news channel close to Yemen's Ansarullah movement, says Saudi jets dropped bombs on Sana'a, Sada, and Ib. They also struck the regions of Shadda, Zahir, and Razeh on the border with Saudi Arabia with nearly two dozen rockets. The bombardments have mostly targeted positions belonging to Ansarullah and its allied army units. However, the military offensive has so far failed to reverse gains by Ansarullah fighters. Meanwhile, on the ground, clashes continue between Ansarullah and remnants of the regime of fugitive former President Hadi over the Dar Sa'ad area north of Aden. Well, to get the latest on the situation in Yemen itself, we're now joined by Mohammed Al-Atta, Press TV's correspondent, who is joining us live now from the Yemeni capital. Mohammed, quite a few bombardments to speak of. Get us up to date.
Yes, just 1 hour ago, the capital Sana'a was hit by a powerful missile. This has left many casualties, and also it has targeted a residential area in Ottan, to the southwest of the capital Sana'a. This area has been targeted for the second time. There are many people who are wondering why this residential area is being targeted, even though that there are also military camp in the mountains, but so far the air missile have targeted at the edge of the residential area, sending waves of fragments and also shrapnels throughout the region. The capital Sana'a has also witnessed the strongest, this powerful explosion, especially that the many people are wondering what kind of missile it's. They say that it's a ballistic missile that only belongs to developed countries. It has shaken the whole capital Sana'a and also caused horror and fear among the residents. The area which has been targeted for the second time, it has been also today greatly damaged, sending also another wave of displaced people, and in order to, it has also triggered alarming level of humanitarian crisis in the country. Many people are wondering why this kind of genocide war against people who are only determined to have their own independent decision making. This kind of war also has also targeted different and other residential areas, also places in Sada and Razeh and different areas of Yemen. Even though the Saudi spokesperson said that they have already achieved their military goals, even though that they are still continuing now, after they have many observers say they have failed to fulfill and achieve their military goals, they are now returning back to residential areas, causing horror and fear and also inflicting many casualties among the civilians, including children and women. Today, this area has witnessed the women are fleeing from their houses without any scarves, without any, because of the horror of this kind of an human missile that is only should be targeting the military capabilities, but so far they are targeting residential areas. Many people are wondering why the international community is still silent toward the atrocities being committed by the Saudi Arabia, and that this human war should be stopped.
Reaction was swift from the UN human rights chief following the deaths of more than 700 migrants who drowned in the Mediterranean over the weekend. In a statement Monday, Zayed Raad Al-Hussein, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, said he was horrified but not surprised upon learning that yet more men, women, and children died in search of better and safer lives abroad. He said that no one would embark on such perilous journeys unless they had no choice. Rupert Colville, a spokesperson for the UN High Commissioner, spoke with journalist Daniel Johnson about the failure of the international community to address the problem of immigration.
Yes, unfortunately, the number of people crossing and the number of deaths has been sharply rising this year. And part of the reason for that, of course, is that the really quite successful sort of search and rescue operation, which the Italians are running, called Mare Nostrum, was stopped last October. And there was significant opposition among various EU states to producing a similar operation at the EU level. So the operation they have had is really much more concerned with keeping people out than with rescuing them. And partly as a result of that, it looks like we're seeing, you know, a series of really awful tragedies.
And this new Operation Triton, which is this slimmed-down version of the Mare Nostrum that you mentioned there, it's obviously having no effect on the numbers of people crossing. In fact, there are many more people this year than last year, as you say. What would you say that we need to actually do now? There's this crisis meeting in the European Union. What exactly do we need to do? How much longer can we go on ignoring what's actually happening?
It's obviously a very complex issue, and people have been discussing it and going round and round in circles for the last 20 years at least. But there have been certain, I think, very consistent calls by experts on migration and refugees, which effectively the EU has not actually put into action. So, for example, setting up a really proper, organized, managed migration program. In other words, people who are needed in Europe, and there are labor needs for migrants very clearly in certain industries, for example, fruit picking, in medical profession, there are often shortages of medical staff, restaurants, you know, who washes your dishes in the restaurant, who cleans your office. Very often it's migrants. So, but the EU has rather sort of buried its head in the sand on that issue, and it's been much more responsive to this sort of far-right anti-foreigner rhetoric that we've been hearing in more and more countries, and which unfortunately has really been prevailing now, as we see it, at the cost of lives.
Do you think that we're really at a point where things might actually change, given that this week the weather forecast is very good? We're likely to see more tragedies or on the sea.
I fear we are. I mean, you know, the push factors are huge. I mean, European politicians tend to paint it as though it's just because Europe's a wonderful place that people are coming, and they're coming to exploit our health systems and our generous social security. And they rather ignore the fact that there's a war in Syria, which has caused 4 million refugees to flee to neighboring countries that are really not very equipped to hold that many people. The international community has not been giving a full amount of money to Jordan, Turkey, Lebanon, etc. And so people, Syrians, are moving on. They're one of the biggest groups crossing the Mediterranean. Similarly, you have Eritreans, long unresolved situation there. And then you have people moving because of poverty from other countries. You know, everyone's known this for years. Refugees move. They have to move to save their lives. Migrants move for economic reasons as well. And in order to stop them, you really need to look at what's pushing them, not just what's pulling them.
Well, I guess we'll see whether anything happens at the end of today's play.
Yes, I mean, the EU, there have been very good proposals at the EU level, particularly the European Commission, for example, 10, 12 years ago, there were a lot of directives, a lot of really well-thought-out policies being proposed, and they tended to get killed off at the sort of high political level because of very hostile national, essentially xenophobic debates taking place, and that's just got far, far worse. I mean, Austria, if you remember, was expelled from the EU for a year, was suspended because the far-right party took part in the government, and everyone was horrified. Now, the kind of policies that far-right party was proposing then are fairly tame compared to what quite a few mainstream parties are proposing these days.
But as Jan Oberg, a founder and current chair of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future, points out, it's the policies of the EU and others which create the horrible conditions driving the desperate attempts to flee, which result in such tragedies.
Behind every refugee, almost, there is an arms trader, because warfare leads to underdevelopment and no hope. And this is not a matter of people that they are trying to find a better life. These are people who are running away from hell. And where militarism goes in, humanism goes out. It's a very, very sad moment for Europe. It does not help to bomb or try to kill people. It comes back. It boomerangs back to us. both in hatred, terrorism, and now in refugees. If you deal with a conflict with early warning and the world community is willing to solve problems instead of trading arms, then we could solve many of these problems way before with much less economic costs and much less human costs.
Ministers of Asian and African nations are assembling in Indonesia's capital city, Jakarta, in preparation for the 2015 Asian-African Summit, which begins Wednesday. The gathering, which aims to strengthen dialogue between the two continents, runs from Wednesday to Thursday. At a pre-summit meeting Monday, Indonesia's Foreign Minister Retno Marsudi said the summit is a needed model of cooperation in the world today. She said she hoped the upcoming meeting would herald a new era of cooperation between the peoples of Asia and Africa.
We want to see a stable, democratic, and prosperous Asia-Africa. We want to see Asia-Africa that respect human rights. And we want to see equality in Asia-Africa and in the world. Growing together is a must. Let us make South-South cooperation and triangular cooperation as a means to grow and develop together.
This past weekend saw the creation of the South American School of Defense, considered by the nations of Latin America and the Caribbean to be a major step forward in achieving regional integration. Although some of the details of how the school will function are still being worked out, it was announced that courses and postgraduate degrees will be offered in defense studies. With a focus on peace and democracy, the South American School of Defense represents a clear break with the U.S.-based School of the Americas, now called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, or WINSEC, and known throughout the region as the School of the Assassins, with a history that's been riddled by scandals of torture and mass murder. Liz Sheffrius reports from Quito, Ecuador.
At the 8th anniversary, commemorating the birth of UNASUR, the creation of the South American School of Defense was a definitive step towards consolidating and protecting the process of regional integration. Secretary General of UNASUR, Ernesto Samper, and representatives of the Higher Council for the South American School of Defense met with delegations from across the region at the headquarters to discuss the implications of the school's creation.
From the start, we have to work out what resources our 12 countries have, who the instructors are that we can share, and gradually we'll receive from each country what it has to offer as part of a process which will deepen our trust and create a connection of friendship and specific cooperation. This is materially represented in a process of construction of the Union of Nations, which is the general mission of UNASUR.
Materialmente también representada en un proceso de construcción de una unión de naciones, que es el propósito general de la UNASUR.
To work in cooperation with institutions from across UNASUR's 12 member states, the School of Defense will be open to military personnel and citizens alike, providing courses and postgraduate degrees in a variety of focuses in defense studies. The School of Defense represents a clear break with the philosophy of the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, otherwise known as the School of the Americas. As authorities said, the school seeks to provide an education that promotes peace and democracy in the region.
Es un cambio de época. Realmente antes teníamos la Escuela de las Américas, en donde a pretexto de capacitar.
This is a change of times. Before we had the School of the Americas, that operated under the pretext that military personnel trained there were the ones who would go against our democracies. Those are times that have thankfully passed. They are times that are a bad memory that I hope never return. The School of Defense is not going to try to replace those organizations that we have the right to criticize. Rather, it aims to lead an effort of cooperation of countries that are in different states of development and have experienced different types of progress in terms of defense.
Cooperativo de países que tenemos diferentes grados de desarrollo, diferentes avances en materia de preparación en defensa.
The school will work to protect the process of South American integration. As authorities said, it will be adamantly opposed to the installation of military bases by foreign governments and will look to resolve conflicts in a way respecting the self-determination of member states. To have a presence throughout the UNASUR member states and with a curriculum centered on the protection of human rights, the South American School of Defense will work to promote regional sovereignty, peace, and stability. Liz Sherfius, Dallas Ward, Ecuador.
Here in the U.S., this past weekend saw the 20th anniversary of one of the worst terrorist attacks in the nation's history, the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. 168 people died and nearly 700 others were injured when a truck bomb exploded outside a federal building in the city's downtown. 20 years later, a remembrance ceremony was held to honor those who lost their lives that day. CCTV's Hendrik Sabrandi was there and filed this report.
Thank you all for being here. This is a very hard time.
On a cool, cloudy morning in Oklahoma City, many hundreds of people gathered at the place where so many lives were lost on April 19, 1995.
This was a place of unspeakable horror and tragedy. How some evil individual would do what he did to snuff out the lives of 168 of our neighbors and friends is unforgivable and absolutely unimaginable.
In the exact spot where a truck bomb ripped into the Murrah Federal Building 20 years ago, a memorial now sits. Here, family members and friends of the victims joined emergency personnel who responded to the blast to observe 168 seconds of silence. Former President Clinton said he prepared for this anniversary by spending time with his new granddaughter.
And I looked at her in that crib so I could remember how you felt, those of you who lost your loved ones.
He said Oklahomans chose farsighted love over blind hatred in their response to the bombing.
Oklahoma City, for 20 years you have honored the memories of your loved ones. You have inspired us with the power of your renewal.
And yet, he acknowledged,
every family here who lost someone would give it all up in a heartbeat to have their loved ones back.
Our dad, Mickey B. Maroney.
The names of each of the dead, many of them federal employees, were read aloud. And then families, many of them clutching flowers, headed to chairs that bear each victim's name. Those 168 chairs are a permanent part of the memorial.
It seems like it's yesterday.
U.S. Marine Captain Randolph Guzman's brother said this anniversary is a time to remember.
Remembering times being with my brother, growing up, remembering his service to his country.
He said the pain of his loss remains, but he's learned to deal with it. For others, the wounds still feel very fresh.
I still try to imagine how she came here from work to change her Social Security card and end up murdered. It's a bittersweet moment for me.
It was a day of reflection and reunions, a day when Oklahoma City marked one of America's darkest hours.
It's just a memorable time, you know, to let everybody know that we haven't forgotten and we will never forget.
President Clinton quoted former South African leader Nelson Mandela, who said two things can't be taken away in the face of evil. That's the mind and the heart. Clinton said Oklahomans had held on to both. This growing tree, which survived the 1995 blast, is a symbol of that resilience. Hendrik Sabrandi, CCTV, Oklahoma City.
Monday, April 20th, was marked by many cannabis advocates as a day to contemplate the United States laws against that drug. To mark that day, we close with this.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Don't bogart that joint. My friend, pass it over to me. Roll another one, just like the other one. You've been hanging on to it, and I sure would like a hit. Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
And And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.